Great to be back with you. Another week of Play by Play presented by our friends at The Advocate, along with our producer, Harrison Valentine. This is the illustrious Kent Lowe, and I'm Chris Blair. And we get together usually weekly. Sometimes our jobs take us from Baton Rouge, but we try to get here as often as possible to kind of update you on the latest happenings of LSU athletics. And, you know, it's always busy, Kent, you know, when the athletic season begins in late August for all of our teams. But this time of year, the February-March crossover, I mean, everybody starts to get in on the action. It is an extremely busy time. So we got our work cut out for us. And a little later on, we're going to have the great Ben McDonald because, again, baseball is underway. We'll touch on LSU baseball here in just a bit. But Ben's going to stop by, kind of preview the SEC, LSU, and all things college baseball. So it's going to be great to have him on the show. Speaking of baseball, it is underway, Kent. Four games at the box this past weekend. Three teams, LSU taking on VMI twice, taking on Central Arkansas twice. And, you know, I think Jay Johnson said it best. The Tigers got off to a 4-0 start. There were really three or four different style games, certainly three different games for the Tigers. They had to outscore VMI in Friday's opener, winning 11-8. They come back on Saturday against Central Arkansas, and it's a pitcher's duel and some great defense. LSU gets a shutout victory 2-0, and then they just explode on Sunday, 27-5, tying a program record of 27 hits in a single game, and also run rule, obviously. And then Monday, a really competitive game with Central Arkansas once again, and the Tigers hold on with a 4-3 victory in nine innings. So I think Jay was kind of happy that early on his team had to face different types of adversity as well as win pulling away. So he kind of got, you know, a microcosm of what the season is going to present in the first 4 days.
Well, that's true. And one of the things I want to ask Ben when he gets in here is what a coach really wants to see on opening weekend and what players hope they do on opening weekend, because there were so many different things. There were times when the weather was ugly. It was a nice day yesterday for the game. I mean, there was a little of everything involved, but that Sunday explosion was pretty amazing, to be honest with you. And Central Arkansas did give them a good test and made LSU do some things to win those games. So that, again, is another part of the opening weekend and figuring out what you have to do to win the game.
I was asked on Sunday, of course, I was with the basketball team in Columbia Friday and Saturday. We'll talk about that big win for Matt McMahon and company in just a bit. But I was asked on Sunday, wow, 27-5, well over a three-hour game. You know, what a way to start the season for you. And I said, you know what? Normally a 27-5 game, certainly out of conference, I would love a 27-5 win over Florida or Tennessee. I'd enjoy Arkansas. I'd enjoy every second of that. But for me, it was great to see the players that we've heard about that transferred in, some of the true freshmen that have come to LSU, a chance to really see them for my first game on the air. Was really great. I enjoyed every second of Sunday's game because you got to see multiple guys play in the field. You got to see multiple guys with at-bats. So it was kind of a great introduction for me to get used to this team to start the season. So another jam-packed weekend of baseball coming up, another four-game weekend, so to speak, this time starting on Thursday through Sunday. Northern Illinois and Stony Brook coming to town. I know Stony Brook makes LSU fans shudder just a bit due to the history there, but it will be Northern Illinois on Thursday, 2 o'clock first pitch, Stony Brook on Friday at 2 p.m., Northern Illinois again on Saturday, this time at 1, and they'll close out the weekend with Stony Brook at 1 o'clock on Sunday. All right, let's move to basketball. Let's start with women's basketball. Another great performance on Monday night. They go on the road. It was great to listen to Patrick Wright. We got to see some of it at the Matt McMahon Show on television, but I listened to the end of the game on the radio, and it didn't sound like the PMAC when LSU women's basketball was playing. but it didn't sound like they were on the road. There was a huge contingency of LSU fans, of course, with Bryan College Station, just a quick little ride from Houston and the large alumni base that is there. But they were treated to a great game. I mean, LSU women's basketball won that game from the tip. The game was never in doubt. Another great performance.
Yeah, I mean, that was what you needed to do on the road. A&M was missing their point guard, and it was the type of game you needed to win handily, and LSU did that. And now back home here Thursday night for one of those teams that beat you the first time in Auburn. So a big game here Friday night.
Yeah, again, five more games remain in the regular season. It will start on Thursday night, 8 o'clock tip-off, a late one there as Auburn comes to town. And I got to believe Auburn, you know, coming off their last game, looked up. Where do we go next? Oh, we go to Baton Rouge to face LSU. A reminder, it's Turner Syndrome Awareness at the PMAC as well. Very important to Coach Mulkey and the women's basketball program. But it will be LSU, number 13 this week in the poll, taking on Auburn. And then they'll finish out the regular season on the road at Tennessee. That'll be another good one on the 25th. Athens, they'll go and take on Georgia on the 28th. Kentucky back here in the Marriott Center on March 3rd. And then they head off to the SEC tournament. Men's basketball. Tough one last week in Gainesville. Another close game in conference play that came down to the very wire, and LSU just missed the shot just before the buzzer to send it to overtime. Heartbreaking for Jordan Wright and the entire program. And, Kent, you kind of wondered, again, storylines. You and I are in the business of storylines. LSU comes up short, can't get it to overtime, and they lose to Florida. South Carolina, who's really one of the surprise teams, not only in the SEC, but in all of college basketball, 21-3 when they roll into the Plains and got absolutely eviscerated by Auburn. I think Auburn hit 11 three-pointers in the first half. They blew them out, and you have to think going into the game Saturday, back at home for the Gamecocks, would LSU be able to mentally recover from that tough loss, and would South Carolina be angry and trying to take it out on somebody, take their frustrations out on LSU? And as it turned out, a physical game, very physical game, maybe the most physical game LSU had played this year, and LSU was up to the task and really, I think, imposed their will from a physicality standpoint against South Carolina. And as just dues would be, Jordan Wright hits two free throws, puts LSU up 64-63 late, and LSU upsets number 11, South Carolina.
Yeah, it was a great game. LSU 16 down in the second half, came back and down six with 4 minutes to go. Tyrell Ward scores 8 consecutive points. Game ends up being tied at 57 all. And then Jordan Wright scores the last 7 points, including 2 free throws with 5 seconds left. That gives LSU a 64-63 lead. South Carolina unable to score on their final possession, and LSU walks out of there with their second road win of SEC play over the number 11 team in the country, and it was just a huge win for Coach McMahon and the Tigers.
Again, it was great to see. Great to see the team celebrate. You could see kind of a pouring of emotion after finally getting over the hump, beating South Carolina 64-63. This week, they're back at home. They'll take on a Kentucky Wildcat team that has been much maligned in their home state there in the Commonwealth because they haven't won every game. That's number one. And number two, they haven't played really good defense a lot of times this season. They can score points. I mean, they're one of the, I think, second or third in the country in at about 89 points a game. So they can score. They haven't played defense every night. But as Matt McMahon pointed out to us earlier this week, the last two games against Ole Miss and certainly against Auburn this past Saturday, where they held Auburn, who scored 100-plus against South Carolina last Wednesday, held the 59 points in their own building on Saturday. Maybe they figured out the defense a little bit, but make no mistake, it's a talented Kentucky team, but it will be an 8 o'clock tip inside the Marriott Center. This team really could use your support. Hope you'll be there in full force when they tip it off between the Cats and the Tigers. Going to be a tall challenge, but Matt says it all the time. Big challenge, but big opportunity.
Well, first of three straight at home, which is very big. I mean, LSU's only played five home games in the SEC, which is the fewest of any team in the league. You've got Kentucky Wednesday night, Mississippi State Saturday night, and then next Tuesday, a week from today as we're taping, against Georgia. So three big opportunities at home to see LSU, chance to come out and support your Tigers, and they need it. They need you there to help push them along against these three teams.
Absolutely. Looking forward to this home stretch. And, again, finishing strong before everybody heads to Nashville and this year's SEC tournament. LSU gymnastics. Well, to paraphrase the song, the kids know it better than I do. But all I do is win, win, win. Is it something you can't? You probably know it. It's probably on your phone. You got it on your iTunes?
No, I don't believe.
All they do is win, and that's all they've done. I mean, this is amazing. You look at what Jay Clark and LSU Gymnastics is doing. Again, they're in the SEC, which means, like so many of the sports, it's kind of the cream of the crop when it comes to college gymnastics. LSU, 9 top 20 matchups so far in the year. And coming up this weekend, or this Friday, it will be their 6th top 10 matchup. Again, had a big win this past week over Auburn at home, another 198 score, which is tremendous. And now they go take on, I think, the number 5 team in the country currently, the Florida Gators in Gainesville. Too bad they got to go to Gainesville. But it's number 2 and number 5, LSU in Florida and LSU Gymnastics.
And three straight home meets now with 198 scores and a big event that will go a long way to deciding the regular season SEC crown this Friday night in Gainesville.
All right, so best of luck to Jay and LSU Gymnastics. And before we go and bring in Ben McDonald in just a bit, we got to give a shout-out to LSU Women's Golf, who, again, expected to have a great year, but that doesn't mean it happens unless you go out and do it. And Kent, so far, so good for LSU Women's Golf.
Yeah.
And it continues today.
Yeah, they're playing in Melbourne, Florida at the Moon Golf Invitational, which is one of the big spring events that they always play in. They were tied going into the final round Tuesday with Auburn. It's not done as we tape, but through about 11 holes, they're up by 13 shots at the moment. So they have exploded in this round. They're double figures under par today so far in the round, and in pretty good shape to get another win and possibly all four of them, as we look at it right now, are in the top 10 individually. So it's a good day so far. Still golf to be played as we tape, but keep an eye on that later in the day and as you look at the social media, because hopefully we'll have a team trophy picture to show you.
That sounds good. Yeah, just before we started taping today, Kent pulled up his phone and said, look at this scorecard, and it is covered in red, which is a good thing for LSU women's golf. All right, we're going to step aside for a quick break. When we come back, the great Ben McDonald is going to join us. We're going to talk some LSU and college baseball right here on Play-by-Play, presented by your friends at The Advocate. Stay with us. Welcome in, Tiger fans. Once again, we told you in the first segment we had a very special guest, and I know that the college baseball season is always already underway, but we always like the last 2 years to have the great Ben McDonald come in, kind of preview not only LSU baseball from his view, but the SEC, because, of course, Ben is synonymous not only with LSU baseball, but with SEC baseball and Major League Baseball. We got a lot to get to, as we do each and every time. And again, first round draft pick, one of two Golden Spikes Award winners here at LSU. It is a pleasure to welcome back the great Ben McDonald. Ben, good to see you.
Good to see you guys. Always a pleasure to be with you guys. Of course, always an exciting time of the year. Baseball getting kicked off. And as you mentioned, spring training's gotten kicked off and the college season's going. So I tell people all the time, I only have two seasons in my life. There's hunting season and there's baseball season. And one kind of runs right into the other. So it's baseball season now.
Yeah, a lot of people say to me, you know, Chris, when do you get time at home? And I say, well, there's not a lot of it. The summertime usually. But I think about a guy like you who not only is not home a lot, especially this time of year,
But you're all over the place.
Yeah.
There's a lot of travel.
It's busy. You know, and honestly, people say, well, I said, I don't really enjoy the travel, but when the umpire says play ball, yeah, that's when I'm all in, you know. And I did 140 games last year combined. It was a lot. I didn't spend a whole lot of time in my own bed at home. I was on the road a lot. But I enjoyed it. The Orioles had a hell of a year, you know. Of course, LSU baseball, obviously, can't do any better than the national championship. So it was a pretty good year last year overall.
Yeah, I think the way I look at it, Ben, is do it while you can and do it while you still love it.
That's
when
right.
You love it, it doesn't make it as bad as maybe people think. Real quick, before we start talking about the season, I was looking up before you arrived today because, as I said, you're only one of two. The great LSU baseball program, legendary, one of the best, one of the tops in the country and has been for a long time, one of two Golden Spike Award winners. And Kent and I went back and we were looking. They've given away the award 46 times, 30 times. It's gone to a infielder, hitter, fielder, so to speak, 16 times to a pitcher.
Right.
Now, it's been given to pitchers early. It's been, you know, it's not as if it's a recent trend, but, and I know you're uncomfortable bragging on yourself, but do you find that it's harder for a pitcher to win the Golden Spikes? And is it different now than maybe it was 20, 30 years ago? Simply because, I mean, You get to pitch maybe once a week.
That's right.
You pitch 7-8, maybe a full game as far as innings are concerned. And then you're going up against guys who are fielding, they're hitting, they're stealing bases. I mean, how hard is it as a pitcher to rise to the top to be a Golden Spikes Award winner?
Yeah, I think it's difficult. I think that's why in MLB you got the Cy Young Award and you got the MVP, you know, and very seldom do you see pitchers get the MVP. It's happened before, but it is very, very rare. It's getting rarer and rarer that a pitcher in the college game can win the Golden Spikes Award. Because like you said, a position player gets to affect the game every day, while a pitcher, especially a starting pitcher, it's just once a week. You know, in my case, it was maybe twice a week. Maybe there was a start and maybe a relief appearance mixed in there along the way, you know, back in the day. But, you know, nothing against Dylan Cruz. He deserved to win it last year, but obviously you could have made a strong case. I mean, Paul Skenes had arguably – the most dominant year, one of the most dominant years we've ever seen, especially in an era where everybody else's ERA went up last year. I feel like we're back in the gorilla ball era where balls are flying out of the ballpark again. We're setting records on home runs and runs scored. I mean, think about this. The average ERA in SEC play, team ERA last year in that 30 games was 6.2. Ooh. That was the average team ERA in the 30-game schedule. And for Paul Skenes to put up the numbers he did last year, obviously you can make a case that you could have had two Golden Spikes Award winners last year. But Dylan Cruz deserved it. He was, I think it was more of a career award for him because he was so good over the course of 3 years. He impacted the game ever since he stepped on campus here at LSU. So you knew one of those two guys was going to win it. And, of course, Dylan Cruz ends up coming out on top. But to answer your question, I think it's becoming more and more difficult for pitchers to win the Golden Spikes Award.
Let me ask this about an opening weekend like LSU had. You played four games now. Tell me what a coach hopes he saw this weekend from a baseball team, what a player hopes he did during this weekend, and you as a baseball analyst, what are you looking for when you look at a team from a weekend like this?
Well, I think if you're Jay Johnson, you're affirming what you saw back in the fall. You're affirming what you saw leading into the season with certain guys. Now, Jay made the statement that things changed when after the fall and he got back from Christmas break with some of these guys. Some of these young guys started to elevate their game. And he said, I've got some tough decisions to make. Stephen Milam is one of those guys he's talking about, right? I mean, from all indications, Stephen Milam had a rough fall. Jay said he was overmatched at time in the fall. He really didn't think he was going to be a part of this. And all of a sudden, he showed back up after the Christmas break leading into the spring season and opening day. And all of a sudden, he was a different guy. He was more comfortable on campus, more comfortable with what he was doing, more comfortable with his at-bats and in the field. And all of a sudden now, he's a kid I think is going to be hard to get out of the lineup. I mean, he didn't start opening day, but, boy, he's been really good since then. So I think for Jay, it's about – kind of affirming what you saw. For the players, it's about okay, let me get this first outing if you're a pitcher out of the way, because anytime you come over and you're a true freshman, or any, even if you're Thatcher Hurd, even if you've been in uniform and been a college player for a couple of years, it's difficult. Opening day, man, it's just something where the nerve factor is at a different level. It even happens at the big league level where the game speeds up on certain guys. We saw Cam Johnson didn't have this, you know, the outing that he wanted to have. He had some control issues. You could tell he was very, very nervous. And so you want to get off to a good start as a player, but this is the time of the year where I think Jay has tough decisions to make, which is a good thing. That's a good thing to have very tough decisions to make. I think most of the spots appear to be set. But that second base position, and can Josh Pearson hit enough to stay in the lineup? I love Jake Brown. He's been really good, the true freshman, and Milam has been really good too. So I think he'll continue to use this pre-SEC schedule to try to land on his best nine players and what his weekend rotation is going to be. And I have a feeling that weekend rotation is going to change as we move forward.
Ben, you know, you mentioned the hard decisions to make. I was asked earlier in the week, actually last week before the start of the season, what are some differences and similarities to last year's team, obviously winning a title, and this year's team? And there are a lot of differences. I mean, again, a lot of the key players have moved on to the next level. But the one similarity I thought, when I think back to the beginning of last year, again, you maybe had a bigger core of returners,
right,
Dylan, and adding Paul Skeens and bringing in Tommy White, who had done what he had done at his previous stop. But there was this idea that, well, there's a lot of talent in that clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get them enough at-bats? How do you get them enough innings in the field and innings on the mound? I thought Jay did a masterful job having a tough problem, as you said, a good problem, but a tough problem on deciding who gets all of those opportunities. To me, that's similar to this year. And the bigger picture to me is your thoughts on how Jay has managed his roster in a day and age where the transfer portal in all sports is a major concern. You're recruiting high school kids.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking into the portal to see who may want to come somewhere else, find a new place. And then you're recruiting your own roster every year. And he's got guys who, on this team right now, whether they're true freshmen that are here that could have maybe played pro or gone and took their chances at the pro level, and certainly guys who could have found another home and probably be starting or playing many more. How does he do that? How do you think he's done that?
It's the most difficult time to be a head coach in college sports right now. There's no doubt about it. Let's back up to the College World Series and the playoff run LSU made last year. So Jay's trying to win the College World Series. As you mentioned, he's trying to talk his potential high school kids that's fixing to get drafted to come to LSU. He's trying to keep the own players he's had. Wes Johnson announced he's going to be the head coach at Georgia. He's looking for a pitching coach, and he's trying to win the College World Series all at the same time. I remember talking to Jay at the College World Series and before that, and he said, I'm sleeping about 3 hours a night right now. Because don't forget, the disadvantage of making deep runs to the College World Series in the baseball world is the transfer portal stuff has already begun. And when you're playing, still playing postseason baseball, you're behind the eight ball because all the other teams that have gotten beaten out, they're bringing kids in for recruiting trips, these transfer portal kids. They're bringing them in. They're recruiting them while you're still playing. You don't have that opportunity to do that. And so it's a difficult time. I haven't talked to one coach yet that likes the transfer portal.
I was going to ask you.
Not one. Yeah. I have picked the brains of almost every SEC baseball coach out there, and they think it's a train wreck.
And you got to remember, all of those guys, including Jay, have benefited from it.
Absolutely.
And yet they still don't like it.
You still got to play the game. To be competitive, you got to play the NIL game and you got to play the transfer portal game because it's where we are right now. Whether we believe it or we like it or we believe in it right now, that doesn't matter, but you got to play that game. So it's a difficult time, man. And on top of that, like you said, you're still recruiting your kids on your own roster right now. And that's the difficult time. I talk to these coaches. It's like, I'm scared to coach Johnny the way I want to coach Johnny because I know if Johnny gets upset, he could take his ball and go somewhere else next year. And so it's a fine line you walk and keeping the players that you have, trying to keep them happy. You mentioned the at-bats, and that's where I think Jay managed the team so well last year with a whole bunch of talent, the number one recruiting class, freshman class last year. He found a way to try to keep everybody happy. That is difficult to do. Early in the year, you like the games. They're no fun to call when the LSU scores 27 runs, 27-5 game. But the good news is everybody got playing time that game. He was able to unload the benches after about three at-bats. Everybody got what felt like two or three at-bats in the ball game. And so it's good to see those players that are used to being superstars in their high school team. All of a sudden they come to LSU. Now they're not getting to play, but they do get in a few ball games to get their feet wet. So all that is important for sure.
Real quickly, one of the reasons I love watching you and listening to you when you're on the call And that's why LSU fans, and I think college baseball fans love it, is that you are outspoken. And I wanted to ask you, all these guys today are so talented. And I think everybody who's played baseball at one point over the last 20, 30 years, they're jealous of how these guys, the tools they have at 18 years old, is quite amazing. But when you have the portal, and again, you're trying to give this young player a chance to, you know, get some time, and he wants to, every player that is competitive wants to play, and they want to play right now. Is there something lost with the raw talent they have that they don't have the development because it's so easy to transfer? And what I mean by that, when you played, I'm sure you had guys who were coming up under you at LSU that you knew got better because they waited their turn, you know, absorbed things from you and some of the other veteran pitchers and, of course, the coaching staff. Is there some of that loss when it's that easy now to just say, I want to play right now, so I'm going to move?
Yeah, I think where we are right now and the environment that we're in, young kids want it now. They want to be the dude right now when they step. They were the dude in high school. They want to be the dude when they step on campus. And that's not the reality of it. And I always tell young kids when I talk to them about it, go back and read Michael Jordan's story. He didn't make his high school basketball team. Go read Shaquille O'Neal's story. He got cut from his high school basketball team. I think sometimes the word competitive and competitiveness gets lost in today's game in some ways because you got to learn how to compete. And the easy thing now is to hit the transfer portal and say, well, you know what? I thought I was going to play shortstop and bat third, and I'm not getting to do that. So I'm going to move somewhere where I can do that next year. Instead of saying, yeah, you know what? Like Michael Jordan said, and his mom told him, well, you work your butt off this summer. And you go back and you show that coach you deserve to be on that high school basketball team. That's what Michael Jordan did. He didn't transfer. And so I think the competitive piece sometimes gets lost in today's game because these kids are so used to being so good. And to your point, for instance, I mean, some kids are so talented in high school. Cade Anderson, for example, who threw yesterday, he could probably throw fastball, curveball over there at St. Paul High School, and he got everybody out. He had a career record in high school in 4 years of 22-1. But now, all of a sudden, he's at LSU. So now it's got to be fastball, curveball, and now you're going to need a third pitch, right? Now you better develop a changeup as you get into high school. So that's how you get away with it. And one thing Skip Bertman did do for me many years ago, and he told me, he said, Ben, you can throw fastball, curveball, and you could probably win almost every game here in college. But I'm going to make you develop a changeup. I'm going to make you develop a forkball. I'm going to make you develop a cut fastball because I know where you're going one day. You're eventually going to need to be able to do those things. So we're going to learn how to do it now. And that was a blessing for me to have Skip coach me and think like the way he thought about where I was eventually going to end up. And so it's a difficult time for kids, and we expect a lot out of them. They expect a lot of themselves. There's a lot of pressure. I mean, when you're Cam Johnson, you turn down the money that he turned down to come to LSU. Are you kidding me? Jake Brown turns down seven figures to come to LSU. There's pressure to perform and go out and do well.
You bring up a couple of points there, and has always made me wonder, people like, and two coaches you know very well, Skip Bertman, Dale Brown.
Yeah.
How would they have handled NIL and the transfer portal if it was alive back then? And I'm just thinking back because when you played, that was kind of when I first got down here. It always seemed like you had those program guys that were a big part of LSU's success during that run.
Right.
You know,
You got to have role players. And Dale Brown called us role players, you know, and that's a part of it that you have to understand what your role is. And it's up to a coach, I think, a lot of ways to kind of explain what your role is. Doesn't mean your role can't change if you do better and you start having success. But I think we understood what our roles were. I don't know how Dale Brown, but I mean, we know Dale wasn't a big NCAA guy to begin with.
Right,
And with everything that goes on with the transfer portal and some of the decisions the NCAA has made over the last few years are just, I think, just horrible decisions. And that's a whole different show, but it is what it is. It is where we are now. And, you know, Tim Corbin at Vanderbilt is like, I don't play in the transfer portal, but he's going to have to play in it. I mean, if you're going to have success in the college game now, you got to play the transfer portal game and you got to play the NIL game because it's just where we are now, whether you like it or not.
You do remember this guy had some basketball talent for LSU.
Well, you know, you think about it, and when you're 18 years old, it's Dale Brown and Skip Burton. Those are your coaches. It's not until you get out and I realize, man, how lucky was I?
Yeah.
How fortunate was I to get to play for Dale Brown and Skip Burton? Not everybody gets to do that. So those two guys really helped shape my life in so many, not just my athletic career, but my life. I mean, Skip's the one who got me in broadcasting 25 years ago. You know, he's the one who walked up to me and said, what are you doing now? I said, well, I'm retired at 30. I'm coaching the kids at home. He said, you know what you'd be good at? I was like, what's that? He said, you'd be great calling baseball games. I was like, Coach, I didn't graduate from LSU. I didn't know anything about broadcasting and journalism. He said, you'll be great. So he calls CST up, and long story short, here we are 20-something years later calling ball games, you know. And so I owe Skip a bunch, no doubt.
I don't have to tell you, one of the most recognizable faces and voices, the great Ben McDonald, our guest this week on Play by Play. All right, let's real quick, let's talk about let's start with the SEC. I looked it up today. We knew where the SEC were as teams in the preseason, but here in the latest D1 baseball poll, there's 8 in the top 25.
Right.
That's kind of the norm. And you look at the usual suspects. And so I want to ask you about the usual suspects. But I think, you know, conferences in every sport are, you know, when you compare conferences to conferences, you're only as strong as your weakest link.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a couple of teams that I think maybe – surprised a few people and will surprise a few people. Starts with Alabama and Auburn a little bit, who again have been competitive.
Yeah.
But I think they have taken a step forward. Let's start with the SEC. I know you're going to tell me it's going to be another just absolute bloodbath to get through the conference schedule, but what do you see in 2024?
I really don't see anything different than what we've seen. I mean, go back and look. The SEC's won the last four national titles. They've won 4 of the last 5, and they've won 9 of the last 14 national championships in baseball. And on top of that, out of the last 14 national championships, the SEC's played for 13 of them. They've been in the finals. That pretty much says it all. I don't see anything different about this year. We knew Florida was returning a bunch, right? I mean, I went back and looked at their projected lineup. They led the nation in homers last year with 146. Their projected lineup this year hit 114 home runs last year. That's what they're returning to the fold. So Jack Caglione expected to be the SEC player of the year. He's the Shohei Ohtani of college baseball. We know what he did, 33 homers last year. They get Kobe Halton, comes over from Alabama, or Kobe Shelton, rather. He's going to play shortstop for them on top of what they already had. They're stacked. I mean, you look at Arkansas, you look at Vanderbilt, you look at Tennessee, all teams, and it's still early. We don't really know. We're just looking on paper what they have right now, but you got to put those teams up towards the top because they're returning a lot of players. They all hit the portal really hard, and they got some real dudes coming back. So I don't think anything changes. You mentioned Alabama. I think they were a surprise last year. I think they'll be in the hunt again this year. Kentucky's another one for me. Nick Mangione has done a really good job. They got in postseason play for the first time. They're one of the top stolen base teams in the country. They're going to continue to run. So Nick's doing a good job at Kentucky. And back in my time, there used to be an off weekend or two in the SEC when you went and played Vanderbilt or somebody. You knew you were going to probably win at least 2 and probably 3 games. It's not that way anymore, man. These teams are very talented. Anybody can beat you on any given weekend. So it's going to be a gauntlet. And for LSU, man, it's a front-loaded schedule for them. I mean, you get Mississippi State at State the first weekend. That's always a difficult place to play. You don't know how good State's going to be this year. But then you got to roll right into Florida. You got Florida, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Tennessee, all in the first half of SEC schedules. Those are all top 9 teams in the country. So I think LSU is going to be more of a second half team this year when Jay gets everything figured out. They got to get through that first half of the SEC schedule, and then it'll be more manageable from there. But I don't expect anything different. I think they're going to beat up on each other. I mean, we got projected at the end of the day, 10 of the 14 teams are going to be NCAA tournament teams. That's what the projection is. That would not shock me at all if there's 10 or 11 teams in there.
Sounds like the same guy made the basketball schedule with the way the baseball schedule shakes
well,
out.
Well, I guess, you know, the national champions, they said, let's just throw it all at them. So,
sure,
again,
why
as Ben
not?
Said, it's a tough schedule. The good news is a couple of those real tough series, it's always great to have them at the box.
No
that's
doubt.
That's an advantage.
They got Florida at home in week 2, and that's going to be big. Yeah. And so be a packed house, and you get 2 of the top teams in the country. And that's kind of where you're going to find out who you are and where you are. LSU didn't get – although there were some nice close games this weekend, you know, the competition's just kind of okay, you know. Now, it'll ramp up when they go to Houston and play in a couple weekends. But once you get into conference play, you'll kind of start to figure out who you are and where your weak spots are.
Ben, you know, when you look at SEC baseball, and again, it's Jay says it all the time, there's college baseball, then there's SEC baseball. When you look at the top 25, again, you have a sprinkling of ACC, some Big 12, with TCU, obviously Wake Forest, for the most part, expected to be number one, at least early on this season. But overall, NCAA baseball, couple of rules have changed over the last couple of years. They've instituted some rules. I know last year we talked about the emphasis on the pitch clock and, mm-hmm. and trying to speed up the games a little bit, and the mound visits, how quickly that has to be done. Is there anything else that needs to be addressed from your view of NCAA baseball to make it better, to make it quicker, whatever people are wanting?
The only thing that I would say, I felt like the strike zone got really small last year, especially in SEC play. And at a time where the ball's flying out of the ballpark really like never before, and I mentioned what the average ERA was in SEC play. And if you look overall, there was one team last year, I think it was Alabama, led the SEC overall in ERA, and their ERA was like 4.5. That was the best ERA in the country in the SEC. And so I felt like the strike zone shrunk to more of a triple-A strike zone, and I think I blame that on, you know, the TrackMan data that we have now. The umpires are using that now. They track every ball around the strike zone, and they grade the umpires. They say it's a teaching tool for the umpires, but no umpire likes to be wrong, right? They don't like to be wrong.
Or taught.
That's right. And so now I think they said, well, if y'all going to grade every pitch and we're going to get kind of looked at, I'm going to make sure I'm calling a ball, where we used to always get the ball off the outside corner in the college game, a ball high, a ball to the outside or inside, and a ball low. It wasn't like that last year. Now, I can't confirm this, but I heard through the grapevine that the umpires this year were asked to get back to more of a traditional college strike zone than what we've always seen in college ball. I think it's a good time to do that. If you'd have told me 10 years ago, let's do it, when the BB Corbett first got introduced and offense was nil, I would say, no, we need more offense in the game. We don't need more offense in the game right now. Offense, I mean, look, offense is arguably at an all-time high in the college game. We don't need that right now. So I'd like to see the umpires get back to, you know, if that's the strike zone, and if a ball catcher sets up right there and the ball is thrown right to the mitt, a ball off the outside corner, I'd like to see that call a strike again. I think it's where we should be, because our college pitchers, bottom line, aren't as talented and as good as our pro pitchers are. They don't command the strike zone quite as well. And so that's the one thing I would like to see change. You mentioned the speed-up rules. It worked in Major League Baseball. We shaved 27 minutes off per game. We shaved 22 minutes off the college game per game last year. I think those are wonderful numbers. You know, the pitch clock didn't seem to affect it. And what's happened is the pitch clock's been in the SEC for a while, and now you're starting to see these guys that go through the college game with a pitch clock. They're adapting well to what the pro pitch clock is now because they did it. It was the veteran guys last year that had a little bit of trouble in pro ball with the pitch clock. But I think it's a better game. It's a faster-paced game. It worked in MLB. We had more offense. We got away with the shift last year. They said no more shifts in the MLB game. You can still shift in the college game, and why not? Because offense is really good right now. So that'd be the only thing I would pick on a little bit would be, okay, let's get back to a more traditional strike zone.
Well, again, Ken, I tell you what, Ben's got to go, and it's great to have him here. I got about a five-minute window on Monday with Doug Thompson and the great Ben McDonald discussing all the intricacies of pitching and strike zone. Now, I didn't understand 90% of what they were talking about, but it was interesting just to watch those guys talk about pitching, especially at the college level.
Well, we've complicated the game a little bit because of the analytical world that's out there now, and that's what me and Dougie were talking about. Now, you know, you can get the spin rates on the pitch, not only the velocity, but you get the spin rates, you get the vertical break, you get the horizontal break. It's cool because if you like launch angle and exit velocity and how far the ball went, man, we can dig deep into all these things now. So it's still the same game at the end of the day, but we've made it a little bit more complicated in some ways.
Check out BRQ Seafood and Barbecue, the official catering service of LSU Athletics, and your top pick for victorious celebrations and special occasions. Explore our daily specials and catering options, or reserve your table at www.brqrestaurant.com. Experience unforgettable moments at BRQ Seafood and Barbecue.
Before you go, talk about broadcasting just a little bit. I still see when you're on your enjoyment of this, your enjoyment of the game, whether it's with Lynn or with Kevin Brown, with the Orioles. I mean, you guys all really seem to have good chemistry, and all the guys you work with at ESPN, but you seem to have a great joy in doing what you're doing.
No, I do. I got into this not knowing. I didn't even keep a score pad when I started 20-something years ago. I had no idea what I was doing. I kind of had to learn the game. And I'll tell you a quick story and what kind of made me do what I do now and the way I do it. I was in Walmart in Denham Springs about my third year broadcasting 20-something years ago, and there was an older lady in Walmart, and she walked up to me, and she's like, you're so-and-so. And I said, yes, ma'am. She said, you call the LSU? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, I love what you do. I said, oh, stop. I said, tell me what you like about what I do, because I'm trying to figure this stuff out. She said, I don't watch much baseball. But she said, when you call a game, I understand what you're saying because you keep the game simple. And I went, oh, my gosh, ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
I'm going to always remember that, because we can complicate the game, and I can talk about force balks and cutoffs and relays and bunt plays and pickoffs and whatever. But I said, you know what? I'm always going to be the person that goes for the game, that's watching really the game for the first time or kind of new to the game, and try to draw new audiences into the game of baseball. I said, I'm always going to remember that. Now, we can get a little bit complicated with it from time to time, but I'm going to try to keep the game as simple as I can. And she gave me some great advice, and I've always tried to remember that. And as you mentioned, I think chemistry is important with your play-by-play partner. I have a good me and Kevin Brown have nothing in common. I'm from the South. He's from up around New York. I like to hunt and fish. He doesn't even know what a fish is. But what we do have in common is we both love the game of baseball at the end of the day, and it works, you know. And so, but I always tell people my favorite time is calling games with the great Len Rollins, because one, I never know what's going to come out of his mouth. Two,
does anyone else?
You know, and when he dropped yesterday, he covers more ground than a fog bank. I was like, I've never heard that one before. But you know, so it's fun with Len, and me and Len's been at it over 20 years now, calling opening day games for LSU baseball. So we always enjoy it. I love working with Len. It's always fun.
Well, I know the people in the SEC love hearing you. I know the people in Baltimore love you. And what a great season last year for you guys to broadcast.
It was some tough times 4 or 5 years ago. We'd go to the ballpark every day going, okay, we're going to get beat, but how bad are we going to get beat today? Now, you know, the Orioles won 83 games 2 years ago, 101 wins last year, won the AL East for the first time since 2014. It's a young core group. And you guys know this, and you know this. When a product on the field is good, it makes our job easier. Oh, yeah. And our job was easy with LSU baseball, obviously, last year, and it was easy for me with the Orioles last year because of the run they put on. So, yeah, it's a good young club that's going to have new ownership soon. It's got a great core coming back. Just got Corbin Burns in a big trade, one of the top pitchers in baseball. And so 2024 is setting up pretty good for the Baltimore Orioles.
Well, again, as Kent pointed out, Ben, you're absolutely the best at it. And
I appreciate the kind words.
Enjoy the work that you do, and we certainly enjoy you taking time out to join us
anytime
here a second time. And I've told you this before. When we go to Hoover for the SEC tournament, which is really one of my favorite times of the year, I really enjoy going back to the room. I mean, sometimes I go to the park to watch the game, to see the team that maybe we're going to play, but I really rather enjoy going back to the room, watching you guys with Tom and with Dave and all the crew. I think you do a tremendous job, and you're the big reason a part of it.
I appreciate
the kind of words. And I've said that same thing. I said, you know, he can talk complicated high-level baseball stuff and deliver it in a way that everybody can understand. And that's your gift, and that's your talent. And again, we're very thankful and blessed to have it.
Well, I always enjoy hanging out with you guys. I love LSU baseball, and the season's beginning. It's an exciting time of the year, and I appreciate you guys having me on. Look forward to it again next year.
Yeah, we would have had you on before the season, but Kent and I were in such exotic and luxurious locales as Gainesville, Florida last week.
So we
had to wait till
good
the
old Gainesville.
All right, Ben, we'll see you down the line. Again, thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Take care, guys.
The great Ben McDonald, he's been our guest this week. I want to thank him for stopping by. As always, Harrison Valentine setting it all up and running the ones and twos. And of course, the illustrious Kent Lowe. This is Chris Blair. Hope you'll join us again next week for Play by Play. Until then, so long, everybody, and go Tigers.